Hello and welcome to Sigma Sports Presents Matt Stevens Unplugged. This is a special International Women's Day episode of the podcast, and so my guest today is an international woman. I'm talking, of course, about Kate Varonu. What can I tell you about Kate? Well, first of all, she's probably done more for the exposure of women's cycling than anyone else in the modern era. She's a former pro rider who met loads of challenges in her career, and now she's actively trying to break those walls down for the next generation of female riders. Now she's the partnership manager at Zwift, and I met her in the early days of the Zwift Academy, which are all about that and how important it's been for parity since day one, and also how I broke my rib whilst in her company. Then we find out why Kate thinks discomfort is a good thing. Unrelated, believe it or not. She's all about taking risks and jumping into the unknown, which probably explains why she's been so successful in delivering the Tour de France femme Epic Zwift. It's only in year three, and it's crazy to think how much it's grown already. This year, it's got a grand départ in the Netherlands, and it's finishing on Alpe d'Huez. We chat about the impact it's having on women and girls, seeing the excitement on the faces of kids by the roadside. And we touch on the impact these changes are having on women and their families, in particular how having a baby is no longer a career-ending decision. So grab yourself a caffeinated beverage and perch yourself in a position ready to embrace a tidal wave of positivity and progression, because this is the Kate Varonu episode. Episode? Let's do that again! Because this is the Kate Varonu episode. You know it's that time again. Matt Stevens Unplugged. Podcast. Kate Varonu hails from a basketballing family in New Jersey, where shooting hoops was life. When she took up cycling after suffering a knee injury, she didn't even know that women race bikes. A couple of years later, she was competing at the top level of women's racing, but quickly learned that it wasn't a viable career option. So she set about changing the world. Now, if you follow cycling even a tiny bit, you'll be aware of the impact of the Tour de France femme Avec Zwift. Well, Kate played an integral role in the delivery of the multi-stage women's event. Now in its third year, not only will the race feature a grand départ in the Netherlands, but the riders will be finishing on the iconic Alpe d'Huez. I was keen to learn more about Kate's journey and her plans for the future, as well as the price of a chicken bagel from Chatham Bagels in New Jersey. Check it out. Kate Varonu, thank you very much for joining me on Matt Stevens Unplugged. It's been a long time in the offing.
Very excited to be here. Thanks, Matt.
No worries at all. First thing, what I like to do on the podcast is establish where you are. I know where you are, but a lot of people in the world won't. Can you just describe where in the world you are and what you can see in the room immediately around you as well?
All right. I am in Sin City. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, in the US, and I'm in my office, my studio. I can see my Canyon bike on the wall over there. I can see a Scotty the Squirrel from the podium of the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift. He's in the room always looking over me. And then, a lot of plants.
A lot of plants. Because you've freshly moved, haven't you? You were in Los Angeles, weren't you? Now you moved across. How are you settling in?
We're settling really nice. It's quite beautiful here. There's a lot more to Vegas than the Strip. And that's what we're learning. Quite a lot of surprises. Surrounded by mountains, really wonderful bike community. Yeah, a lot of fun. Enjoying it so far.
So just briefly before we do a bit of a dive into your background, Kate, and what's it like riding in the desert? Because that was one thing I know we had a chat about. You're a little bit concerned about the riding, but how's that been going?
Yeah, it's good so far. It's definitely different. I couldn't ride on Saturday because there was like 80 to 100 kilometer per hour winds. Desert is different beast. But generally, I would say there's also absolutely beautiful sun most days. It can definitely be a little bit windy, a little bit dusty. But once again, everywhere you look, mountains.
Lovely. It does sound like I'll have to visit you at some point over there, because it's one of the places I think that you kind of have to visit at least once. I think it's like bucket list location, if you ask me.
Oh,
if
yeah.
You ask me. Actually, last question, because I'm intrigued. Have you visited Caesar's Palace, or have you been down the Strip and done a bit of amateur gambling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Strip is the Strip. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world. And I've been there quite a few times and I'm never... not just kind of flabbergasted. It's just the lights and the action and just the crowds. It's kind of wild. I went and drove the strip the night before the Super Bowl. So like, that's the other thing is like Vegas is becoming this like sport capital of the world. We have F1 now, the WNBA, two-time champions, the Las Vegas Aces. And then we had the Super Bowl in early February. So it's alive. It's electric.
Yeah. Is it Las Vegas? Am I right? That's got that big dome, the big sphere.
Oh yeah. It's just called Sphere.
Yeah.
And it is wild. I can actually see it from my house and I'm like a good 20K away, but you can see it everywhere. I have gone to it. I saw there's a Darren Aronofsky movie that they play pretty regularly. And I saw that like a very beautiful nature film. And then of course, U2 residency, which is I think almost over. So I'm kind of excited to see what's next. It is quite a spectacle. It is as wild and impressive and incredible and bright and as you can imagine, just really a feat of architecture and light and sound.
I did watch, sorry, we got off on a slight tangent, but I'm just slightly fascinated. I did watch a documentary about when it was built. And I thought that's absolutely amazing. And now you've moved there. It's another reason to come, I think.
Another reason to visit.
Anyway, another reason to visit. Not that I needed really more reason to visit UK. I think what we need to do as well, just first up, is just establish a little bit about how we know each other. Because, you know, we're as well as being colleagues for several years now, working primarily with Zwift together in various capacities. During that time, become friends as well. And I've popped over to LA a few times and you've taken me out, shown me the sights. And so we go back a few years, don't we? We've had a lot of fun together. But I think it's fair to say, correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, that the first time we actually met was on the Zwift Academy. The second edition of the Zwift Academy, wasn't it? Down in Koblenz in Germany, wasn't it?
It was in Germany. Winter Germany.
That was cruel a special
what we
few
did
days.
That year. What was for the Zwift Academy finals? We surprised the riders. They show up and they get off the plane in Germany to snow, and we hand them a mountain bike. And that was an incredibly wild Zwift Academy finals. And that's where we met. Yeah, and it was fun.
That's a lot of fun. It was
Tanya Arith,
again.
Second champion.
Yeah, Tanya. Exactly.
Tanya also still a great friend.
Yeah, Tanya's great, isn't she? Actually, Tanya is another friend of the podcast. So we've had Ella Harris on the podcast. We have a Cassia on the podcast. Was a different Academy winner, but a lot of the women involved in the ZA and Canyon SRAM have been on the pod. So glad to have you along for the ride. So I just wanted to set that. Brilliant characters. Wanted to set that in context. And also the fact we had a couple of pretty late nights because I broke my rib, didn't I? We did go-karting, didn't we?
Yeah, there was go-karting. There was a broken rib from go-karting. Yeah. There was a banana suit people were in a banana suit running around this bizarre hotel. That was owned by the Haribo family. The hotel, remember?
Yeah.
And there was like concrete, giant bear statues all around the very, very odd place. A lot of taxidermy.
Honestly, guys,
it's like the stuff of nightmares.
It was, and you bear in mind, I was kind of tripping on opiates at the time as well. So
well, that was your fault. I mean, you're trying to drive carts with a World Tour women's team. You know, that's danger. That's danger.
Yeah,
we
got a little bit. Yeah, they were amazing. It got
no women's racing is generally more aggressive. Yeah.
It was very competitive, but that whole weekend, it was just so much fun. But I remember the early days of the ZA, it's a lot more structured than it was. But because of the weather then, we really had to think on our feet about what tests and what tasks to put them through. And that was a really lovely learning process, wasn't it? The early days of the Zwift Academy, from what it was then to what it is now. I mean, it really has developed. But the early days, we were like just trying to find out exactly what it was, weren't we?
Yep, we were. You know, it's interesting. We know so much about, you know, the power profiles of the riders going into it. But you and I both know pro cycling is so much more to that. How do you handle, you know, a variety of intense situations? And That's what we think we did really well in those early Zwift Academy finals, is just kind of putting them through the paces and a lot of really interesting challenges, not really sure what's going to happen next, a lot of surprises. And you really learned a lot about what these women were made of. So I thought it was a lot of fun, and wow, what a foundation it built for. Now look at that program. It's thrilling.
Oh, exactly. Well, just, I want to go back in time a little bit and then lead back through the academy and obviously onto the Tour de France Femme Evek Zwift, which you're an integral part of bringing to life, really, Kate. But let's go back. What I want to know a bit more about, because I've obviously read a lot about you, we know each other, but what I don't know a lot of the granular detail, because let's start with basketball. That was the first sport that you fell in love with, because you're a very tall woman. You're very, you know, yep. You know, very, very tall. You're kind of semi-pro basketball player. Just explain those early years and then how that ultimately led to riding a bike, because I don't think we've ever had this conversation.
Yeah, so I am a basketball player by trade. I grew up in a basketball family. Everybody played basketball. We had the basketball court, like, you know, painted on the driveway. That's what you did in my family. I'm 6 feet tall, 1.83 meters, giant cyclist. Yeah, so I played two older brothers. I played all through high school and then Division I college player. Loved basketball. Played at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. And unfortunately, as a lot of female athletes know, soccer and basketball especially, I had a couple torn meniscuses and I had a bunch of knee surgeries during that time. And it really just became harder and harder to run. And I needed to kind of pick up something else after basketball. So after college is when I started biking. I always had a bike, you know, just to get around. Yeah. It was really more of a mode of transportation and just fun. I just like to just roll around this, you know, to classes and stuff like that. And next thing you know, I'm riding my bike. My husband and I meet. We're riding fixie bikes. We're taking the fixies out for like 50-mile rides. And next thing you know, we decide to get... Yeah. And you know, you've met my husband. You know Mike really well. Mike,
Mike
is now... Yeah, Mike Hurley is a bike painter. And but we got into bikes together 20 years ago with fixie bikes. And then he loved like the mechanical side of bikes. So he got us some old Colnago, like 80s Colnago down tube shifters. And we started riding those all around. And then someone invited us to a bike race in Philly, which you probably know the Philly bike race. It was the Core States. And then it was the Liberty Classic.
That's a massive race.
UCI, yeah. One of the few UCI races in the States. And somebody invited us to a party on the wall. You know, the wall is the climb
that really steep
in
hill.
The race.
Yeah.
Yep. It's like a 20 to 25% like half K wall. And everybody in Philadelphia is out partying on it. And we see this bike race and a pack of men go by. And then shortly after, and I was taking pictures at the time, Mark Cavendish was in that pack. And a couple of minutes later, a women's pack goes by. And I'm just like, I had no idea women even raced bikes. And I fell hard for it at that point and decided that was something I wanted to try to do. I wanted to try and be a pro woman cyclist. I really love riding a bike. I love pushing myself. And like 3 years later, I was in that race.
Wow. I love that. There's so many people at all different levels of the sport, including world and Olympic champions, whose first time experiencing cycling inspired them to go and do it themselves. You know, like there's so many athletes now. I mean, cycling is, I mean, I guess a lot of sports are like that, but seeing it even relatively late in life, and I say that respectfully, Kate, that it can inspire you that much that you wanted to do it. So and you were racing in the pro peloton just a couple of years later, as you say.
Yeah, so I raced domestic pro in the U.S. It was a ton of fun. We had a really specialized crit team. One of the years I raced for this team called the Fearless Femme, and we had the U.S. national crit champion, Teresa Cliff Ryan, and the Australian national crit champion, Kimberly Wells, on one team. And it was a ton of fun. But, you know, I did get into it later in my 20s. And so then I was in my early 30s and there wasn't a lot of opportunity. Not many people were making like a real salary. It was hard to get over to Europe. I did the tour of San Luis, the Argentinian race. They added a women's race. I think it was 2014. I did that race. I had a ton of fun. But it was I realized that I had to get back to my career. It wasn't a viable career option. So that's when I started working in cycling.
Yeah. And what at that particular time were you doing professionally then? I take it you wanted to try and turn pro, but there weren't the options, were there? And even in Europe, as we know, Kate, around that time, you had to be one of the best riders in the world before you even earned something resembling a salary, didn't you? So the disparity was yawning, wasn't it? I mean, it's enormous.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. So I was working in marketing. I was a communications major. And when I was racing and training, I was at the T-Town Velodrome, the Trixlertown Velodrome in the States in Pennsylvania, which is a pretty famous track. And I became their director of marketing. And that was a ton of fun because in the summers, the US summers, a lot of the internationals, especially Australians and New Zealanders, came over and raced a season on the track in their winter. So you had a ton of exposure to world-class talent. And I could stay super fit on the bike. I still would jump in races from time to time. And it really, it was a great, entry into the sort of cycling world.
And how, and at what point did you end up coming to work at Zwift and then being, well, I mean, your profile as somebody within the sport is high because of the projects that you've been a real integral part of. So how did you end up working for Zwift and then taking on those projects, Zwift Academy, and then latterly the Tour de France? So just give us an insight into that.
Sure. So it started, I was working for Thompson Bike Tours, who is like one of the best bike tour operators in Europe, taking people on these really ambitious adventures, especially to the Giro and the Tour de France. They were the VIP tour operator to the Tour de France. So I was literally like taking people to the men's tour about 8 or 9 years ago. And I noticed that a bunch of my clients were using this thing called Zwift. I saw it all over Strava that they're riding in this place called Watopia. They're riding in London. I'm like, what is this thing? So I look up Zwift. I had just moved to LA and it turns out Zwift was like right there. It was in Long Beach, California, about 20 minutes south of LA. So I wrote them an email literally 8 years ago this month. And I said, hey, I work for this bike tour company. Let's do a Strava challenge together. I'll give you a trip to like a VIP trip to the Tour de France. We can challenge people to ride a certain distance in Zwift to win this, once in a lifetime trip to the Tour de France. And I just sent that to partnerships@zwift.com. And they wrote me back right away. They were like, that's a great idea. Come on down to the office, meet the team. Let's see what we can work out together. So I did. And that's when the cycling industry just, you realize how small and tight it is. I met Scott Barger and Mike McCarthy, early guys at Zwift, one of the founders and one of the leading partnerships guys. And we knew all the same people in the sport. It was a lot of fun. We were just, hit it off right away. Next thing you know, we do this promotion together. It goes really well. We become friends. I'm just riding bikes with them now on weekends. Yeah. It turns out that Scott Barger lived down the street from me. So we start riding bikes together all the time. And that's when a couple months later, Scott was like, hey, we've got this thing coming up in Zwift that I think you might be perfect for. We're going to host a global talent ID competition in the video game because we're inspired by this GT Academy, that Nissan PlayStation driver competition to win a real life driving experience. They wanted to do that in Zwift, in the virtual cycling game. They had this idea called Zwift Academy. They had a partner lined up, Canyon SRAM Racing, the hottest women's team in the Peloton. They're going to host a global competition to win a pro contract. And Scott thought I'd be, with my experience racing and my passion for the sport, thought I'd be a good person to kind of take it and run with it. So I did. And wow, like... 8 years later. Yeah. I mean, it was so thrilling to me. It was just the idea because, that was a big problem when I was racing is just talent identification, just being able to be seen, I mean, if you didn't win the Philly bike race, you're not being seen. And so the idea that we could sort of democratize it, that anybody could lay down their power, their best power, and show what they what they're made of, and you know, have a chance to be recognized as a talent, as a potential in the sport. You know, this idea of creating a new pathway was so exciting to me because it was, you know, it was solving a problem in the sport, which is, you know, the ability to identify talent and to see, you know, I always say like the best riders aren't even on bikes yet. You know, I mean, you see it all the time, especially on the women's side of the sport, this new talent coming from rowing and running and soccer, and they get on a bike and it's like, wow, the unlimited potential. So I just, I was thrilled at the idea of doing something differently. And I love the way that Zwift was thinking and using their virtual world to really disrupt and to try something totally wild. And it was, it really was. And I think you might remember that first year too, there was a lot of naysayers. There was a lot of people saying, whoa, whoa, oh, what is going on over here? You're going to take somebody riding in their basement and throw them in the Pro Peloton?
I do remember because I wasn't involved in the first with ZA, but I was obviously fully aware of it. And I'd been introduced only a year earlier than that to Zwift by Eric Min, one of the other founders, also friend of the pod. Yeah, it did. There was a lot of criticism or naysayers, as you said, or people just almost taking the mickey out of it. It's like, this can't be real. It's a bit of a joke, really. And now look where we are now. But what I loved about it carried on the disruptive spirit of what the game was all about anyway. But also for the first 2 years, it was just on the women's side as well, which again was enormously disruptive within the industry, wasn't it? So what was that like driving something that was just focused first for the first 2 years on the women's side of things?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I just, you know, it was so exciting that Zwift was thinking outside the box. And it was, you know, that first year, the cool thing about it is that, you know, we opened up the gates, you know, anybody could try out for this pro contract. And that's what we thought we were doing. We thought we were going to go find a diamond in the rough. But in the meantime, what we did is we built the foundation for the women's community on Zwift too. So you saw the potential of the program, not just to, you know, identify talent, but also to create a global community of women cyclists, which again, the sport really needed more places for women to connect, to feel, you know, comfortable and invited and supported, and to connect with other women cyclists. Because I know when I started riding 20 years ago, I was always like one of the only women on a ride, you know? So the idea that we could also create a global community, help women connect to other women, bring more women into the sport is also, that was a really nice side effect of the program as well. So yeah. And it was, I tried not to take some of that, you know, sometimes there'd be an article that came out that really, you know, kind of questioned the program or challenged, you know, the concept. And to me, I learned a lot from that because I now embrace that sort of, that risk or that discomfort is usually a good thing. It usually means that you're shaking things up, that you're trying things.
Totally.
You know, trying to do things differently. And it's a good energy. And if you really embrace it, you can, you know, create, new opportunities. And, you know, the sport needed to be shaken up a little bit. There wasn't a ton of new talent coming into just in general, it was being done the same way for a long time. And I kind of welcomed change at that point on the women's side of things, especially. So.
And when did you start to notice that it was really having a bit of an impact? And that, let's go forward a couple of years, because year three of the ZA, we saw the men's side of it as well. And that's just got bigger and bigger side by side. And some of the numbers now that we're looking at, I think roughly, anecdotally, Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, this year's ZA, 160,000 people. I mean, correct. Oh my God. I mean, just think about what that's going to look like. Of course, a lot of those people were just going to get looking to get fitter. But when you think about that as a project, it is amazing. But at what point did you start to think, yeah, we're actually really making a difference here. We actually are creating a community and we are doing things that, you know, we are thinking outside the box, but we're aggressively promoting, you know, the women's side of things in particular. When did you become acutely aware of that? And when did you notice it was making a bit of a difference?
I think, I mean, early on, honestly, because the media pickup on it was nuts. I mean, it was a really, it was the most talked about thing when it first dropped. And especially, I think, you know, even year two, when we saw Ella Harris, like, win her first race, I think that was a big moment when she won. I think it was the Sun Tour or something. She won a stage.
She won a stage there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, you just saw that this program had, you know, the potential to unearth, you know, some great new talent. And that was being really embraced by the Peloton. It was really looked up to, and really everybody wanted to talk to me about it. It was really exciting to follow the journey of the winners. And then, of course, you know, when we hit the Jay Vine year, and Jay Vine and Neve Bradbury won in 2020, and those two, you know, immediate impact in the Peloton right away, you know, getting massive results, and Zwift Academy being talked about almost every race I watched, you know, Zwift Academy comes up in the commentary, and just kind of knowing that it now is like kind of part of the fabric of cycling, like a legitimate pathway to the pros, and a great story, you know, a really great story. So it has unlimited potential.
Yeah, definitely. But the next big chapter, I think, in terms of your involvement with Zwift and in promoting the women's side of the sport. I mean, as you might know, this pod is going to be going out on International Women's Day on the 8th. So you'll be listening to this on that day. And the slogan for this year's International Women's Day is "Invest in Women, Accelerate Progress," and that's the slogan globally. But you've been doing that for the last 7 or 8 years, haven't you? And that led us then into the birth of the women's of the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift as well. So talk a little bit about the genesis of the women's race, of the women's Tour de France Avec Zwift.
Yeah. So, you know, the Zwift Academy really did plant the seed at Zwift is, you know, what else could we do with our platform? If we could, you know, if we could create a new pathway to the pros, it really got us close to the women's side of cycling and the challenges that women face in the sport. So when we started elite racing in Zwift, we did that with complete parity because we had absolutely no excuse not to. You know, we have our own virtual world. We can literally build the world of cycling we want to be a part of. So when we introduced racing, when we did a UCI Esports World Championship, 100% parity across the board, equal broadcast, equal prize purse, equal opportunity, equal distance for men and women. And that was something really exciting. That was something that we just believed in as a brand. This is the way we're going to go. And this is the approach we're taking to the sport. So when the pandemic hit and we're having conversations with ASO about hosting a virtual Tour de France, you know, the 6-stage exhibition race in Zwift that year when the Tour de France was on pause, we said, yeah, we'd love to do it, but we're going to do it Zwift rules, which is of course that, you know, equal opportunity for women and men. And ASO was 100% on board as well. And as you know, the women's teams had really embraced the platform as an opportunity to not only to race and to be seen, and to, you know, new opportunities in esports, but also a new way to connect with fans, a new way to connect with sponsors. Yeah. I saw early on Nicola Kramer's at the time it was the 2016 development team, on Zwift early on. Canyon SRAM coming at us with Zwift Academy and working with that team for years. So the women's Peloton was already really using Zwift, really enjoying the opportunity that Zwift offered. So when we did host the virtual Tour de France, the women's racing was fantastic. I think the shorter format of the racing really suited their talents. They were more experienced Zwift racers, and it was a ton of fun. I mean, I remember Tanya won a stage. Tanya Arith, the Zwift Academy champion, won a stage in that virtual tour. And this was broadcast on Eurosport. I mean, you know, it was a big deal because there was nothing else to watch in cycling at the time. Nothing else.
I remember it. It was great. I remember Tanya won the stage on Fuego Flats, didn't she? And in that bunch,
she
in
did.
That sort of reduced bunch sprint. I remember that well, but I was calling it and And I remember we had all those, I mean, as a logistical operation on its own to get everybody from around the world hooked up with people in South America. We had guys like Rigoberto Urán on, just to give you a sense of where people were, from Norway down to South America, from New Zealand to Australia to Canada and everything in between. It was amazing. But I think you're quite right. And looking at it from my memory and completely objectively, the women's racing was actually quite a bit more exciting. There were several of the guys who really took to it, the top level pros and obviously the Zwifters. Yep. But generally speaking, as a percentage, the women got it more quickly.
Yeah.
And a few of the guys, I'm going to be honest, went through the paces. But the women didn't. They totally got it. The teams got on board. They did. The teams got on board because they understood the value proposition. Women couldn't do anything else. So they got it first.
They did. Yeah, they recognized this was broadcast all over the world. That, you know, they're going to bring their best. And it was a lot of fun. Yeah. And that's what planted the seed. That's what started the conversation with us in ASO about what's it going to take to bring a women's Tour de France stage race back. And I got to give Eric and Steve Beckett and so much of our leadership so much credit for just believing in it, for recognizing that we might be just the right partner to make that happen. And, you know, us signing on for 5 years as the title sponsor is really what pushed, I think, ASO over the edge, gave them the confidence that, like, okay, with the right partner, you know, with all of what they bring, you know, that all the iconic elements of the Tour de France, and with Zwift's sort of disruptive thinking and long-term commitment, we can make this happen together. We might be just the perfect combination to bring a Tour de France Femme of Zwift to life and make it a sustainable race that's really going to help, you know, change the game.
So how were those initial conversations? Because I was following it keenly. I think everybody was. We all wanted it to happen. And we know that, you know, Zwift were the driving force. And was there initially a little bit of reluctance politically on ASO's part? Or was it all smooth sailing? Because there were some initial comments from Mr. Prudhomme himself that weren't overly positive. There was a little bit of doubt. And it was, you know, let's be honest, let's cards on the table. It's a raging success now because you believed in it. But initially, how difficult was that as a challenge?
Well, to be, you know, perfectly frank, if they really believed it was going to be a success, they might have done it years before, you know? So I think there was some reluctance, and it did take a lot of, you know, we were all kind of jumping off together into the unknown. You know, I think any of us that were probably following women's cycling really closely probably knew, you know, the potential of, you know, the women's racing and the characters of the women's peloton to capture, you know, the hearts and minds of audiences. But, you know, it wasn't a proven fact yet. It really wasn't. And there had been so many challenges to just watching women's racing over the years. So you couldn't really gauge the potential yet. So, that race is really the first time that we caught a glimpse of what, you know, what kind of audience and fans on the ground that women's racing can truly bring to the future of the sport. I mean, I look at it now and it's like, it's so exciting to see how many new fans that women's cycling is bringing to the sport, which the sport needs. You know, we know, like, the same crew has been watching the Tour de France for years, but the women's side of things has this potential to introduce, you know, the beauty of bike racing to whole new audiences and to, you know, to bring some fresh eyes to the sport, which is also important for the overall growth of the sport, not just the women's side.
Yeah, enormously. And I had the privilege last year of being on the ground for Eurosport. We met a few times. Actually, we met most days, didn't we? Did we ever have a glass of wine or a beer? I can't remember. Maybe at the end we did. But we met you know, intermittently. You were super busy. But I absolutely loved it. You know, I did the tour and then the tour Femme avec Zwift. And I noticed different sorts of crowds. I noticed a lot of old hands. But also the day that we were... It was the Tourmalet, I think. Was it the Tourmalet? No, the day into the mist. That, but it was the Tourmalet.
Yeah, Tourmalet
it?
Was the Tourmalet. Mist.
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, the day.
Stage seven.
We were thinking, are the crowds going to be here? It's not on the coattails of the men. And It was amazing. I had goosebumps. I know this is phenomenal. Quite well documented, but from my own perspective on the ground, there was a new sort of fan. There was a lot more families rather than just a lot of blokes. There seemed to be younger girls, kids at the finishes too.
There were a lot more families.
You know, yeah, it was just far more familial rather than like a rowdy kind of crowd. It had a different feel to it. But the numbers were insane. And I mean, it's exciting, isn't it? As we move into this year now, of course, we're in 2024.
Yeah.
To look at what's going to happen maybe on Alpe d'Huez. I mean, that's going to be mind-blowing, isn't it? You know, but you're
excited
about that.
I thought it would take us years of the women's race to finally get to, you know, like a climb like Tourmalet or Alpe d'Huez. And here we are, year two, year three finishing on Alpe d'Huez. That is going to be mental. Can you imagine Dutch Corner with Demi out there? I mean, come on. It's
going to be insane, isn't it?
Just so electric. I cannot wait. I really can't wait. And even this year's tour, each day was better than the last. So, I think that's the beauty of it. It's just really great sport. It's great sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, let's be honest. We're talking about the women's side of the sport here primarily. And there was a lot of people who said, women's racing is dull. You know, because I that I know quite clearly, I don't want to watch women's racing. It's rubbish. It's like, well, are you blind? Have you watched what happened at the Tour de France and Tour de France Femme of Vic Zwift? And every day was insane. It was so, so exciting and super unpredictable. And then Canyon SRAM got their win because obviously we were a little bit invested in that team, let's be honest. And that was great to see.
I love that
to see those guys win. But every day, we thought there was going to be loads of bunch sprints, but ultimately there's only one proper bunch sprint the whole race.
Yeah.
So aggressive, so exciting to watch.
Yeah, it's really so much new talent too, to see Yara win on stage 4 and Ricardo win, I think it was stage 5. It was really exciting to see some truly breakthrough performances. And that's indicative of like the depth now that we're starting to see in the women's pro peloton. Yeah. You know, for years, that was a bit of a problem, is that there was a couple riders that were so much better than everyone else. There was like 5 names that were winning all the time. And now you're really seeing every team has, you know, a bunch of cards to play. Look at Omloop a couple weeks ago. SD Works can be so dominant, but Lidl Trek played them. And, then all of a sudden, you know, frees up Voss to take the win, you know, because, they were able to, you know, like, you know, Lidl Trek was kind of 1-2 punching at it. And then Voss sneaks away and wins it. It was great.
It's fantastic. And also what intrigues me as well is, it's such a big prize, isn't it? Alongside the world championships, winning the Tour de France Femme Vic Zwift is the riders now. Like, look at Lotte Kopecky, for example, a rider that you think is never going to win the Tour. She podiums last year after climbing, you know, out of a, you know, some of the best climbing she's ever. And now coming to this season, has lost 3 kilograms because she wants to focus on the Tour, you know. So you've got, I mean, that's going to be an interesting battle within the team. With that, I mean, that's another conversation entirely, isn't it? But
It's so great. It's so great.
Yeah. My point being is that it's just so, so enormously important that riders are willing to completely almost change the sort of rider they are to win it. You know, it's wonderful. I mean, from day to day, Kate, I know your role within Zwift to change slightly. You're head of, partnerships. We're looking at partnerships now. But in terms of your involvement in the Tour de France Femme of Vic Zwift and course design, do you have much involvement with ASO, or do they pretty much do that themselves? Or is there any liaison at all? How does that work?
No, that is, ASO does plan out the route. And of course, we have Marianne Roos as the director of the race, which is huge, you know, and that gives me a lot of confidence that she's really thinking about what's going to bring the best action, what's going to be the best, you know, parkour for an 8-stage women's race. So I've got a lot of faith in Marianne. And from what we're seeing this year, starting at Rotterdam, going through Belgium, and then ending on Alpe d'Huez, I mean, what more could you ask for? I'm really excited to bring the race to new countries already, too. We are now, you know, 3 years in, we have a Grand Depart. So that's going to be wild in Rotterdam, the first couple stages. And then, you know, we'll go through Belgium, you know, where Lotte Kopecky is, you know, a national treasure. That's going to be thrilling. And then to finish on one of the greatest Tour de France climbs ever, the iconic Alpe d'Huez. I mean, you know, if we ever feel like, oh, hey, this is, you know, there's something we don't really like about the course design, we'll probably have a conversation. But this is, you know, this is what ASO does best. They have so much incredible experience. And then with Marion, you know, kind of driving the design, we feel really good about it.
That's good. Yeah, it is. I mean, we both, again, another time we bumped into each other was back end of last year for the Tour de France route reveal, didn't we? For both the men's and the women's races.
Yes.
And that was a lot of fun. And that was always nice. I'm shame it wasn't for a little bit longer, but I do think the race is beautifully well-crafted, quite flat, but still lots of opportunities to break things up. And if you look at the race over there, because it's 7 days, but with 8 stages, a split stage on one day,
exactly.
Isn't there? But it literally just starts off very
nuts.
Flat and just gets harder and harder and harder. It's like a one big ramp test going through 3 different countries. I'm very, very excited. So I think they've done a good job with the course design, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's been such a fun partnership. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I won't go into renewing because we've got a couple of years left on the contract. Let's leave that for another day because that does not get too controversial. But no, it's I'm just trying to imagine a world without that race now. Even if Swift weren't involved, I mean, I'm really thinking aloud. It needs to be an event that exists on its own, whether it will have different partners in future or not. It's so fundamentally important, isn't it? This race now.
It really is. It's completely changed the game. We're seeing such a wonderful impact on, you know, just the commercialization of the women's side of the sport, the professionalization of the women's side of the sport. So much more opportunity, more investors coming to the table, social media accounts really growing, you know, the fan base is really building. So all the elements that we really need to build a sustainable future of the sport. And now we're starting to see the development pathways really build as well. You know, I think 5 of the Women's World Tour teams now have development programs, which is going to be the next big step to ensuring that, you know, that we're also feeding the pipeline. So I've loved seeing just the profiles of these superstars rise. I mean, they're just walking around the team buses last year at the start in Clermont-Ferrand was such a spectacle. I mean, just, you know, 10 people deep outside of just trying to, you know, catch a glimpse of Demi or Lotta or Cassia. That's exciting. It's, you know, that they're becoming household names, that people are getting to know the personalities, that everybody wants Cecily to win a stage just to hear the interview after the race. You know, I mean, there's just so much good happening.
Of course we do.
Yeah. You know, where before, you know, most people just knew one or two names, and now you're really starting to expose the wonderful personalities and the talent and the depth of the women's pro peloton. It really has a lot to offer the future of the sport.
No, it is. It's grown just so much. And I think it's fair to say that without the work of brands like Zwift and the work and the belief and the drive that you have, Kate, we might have got there eventually. I don't think we'd have seen this dramatic acceleration. I think it's been a real decision that's been made. Risks have been taken, the right sort of risk. You know, it's been disruptive, but you're quite right. We were living in a time where it was super conservative, archaic. I'm talking about a sport that I love, but a sport that ultimately was exceptionally flawed and disparate and dramatic and massively unfair. But yourself at the helm or in the center of it, with lots of other people involved too, of course, have really driven for this change. And it's, I'm blowing smoke up your bum. It's just fantastic what you've done. It's just amazing.
I mean, you can imagine for me, it's an absolute dream because, you know, I personally faced a lot of the challenges of the sport. And there was times where I was going to just turn my back and go a totally different direction. You know, like, hey, maybe I'll go work for the WNBA, you know, but the beauty of this sport and to see it now recognizing how much women have to offer the future of the sport. And seeing, you know, I got to be in some of the race cars at the race last year, and seeing little girls on the side of the road and their eyes so big, holding big signs for the riders, wearing jerseys. You can feel the change. You can see the change. Everybody's excited about it. I mean, we feel like the smartest people in the room, honestly, getting behind this early. It feels like an absolute no-brainer now. It's like, wow. Like, I mean, it's such an exciting place to be right now, getting behind women's cycling and women's sport in general. I mean, this is the headlines across the bigger sports story right now is women's sports and why it's a great investment, why brands should get behind it, why the fans are more engaged, why the athletes are incredible ambassadors for their sport, incredible ambassadors for brands. It's a wonderful place to invest right now. And, you know, you're just seeing such a massive impact, and it's all because of that visibility. So, this is why, you know, I got my new version of the Watch the Femme cap on today. You know, this is our big campaign that just says, just watch what happens, invest in women, pay attention to women. Let's all build a bright future together. This is a huge part of our mission as a company, is just to grow the sport. You know, and it's been really fun because we're not your average sponsor. We're a sponsor that can really bring it to life in our platform as well. You know, we actually built a virtual, you know, France World, and we put riders' names on the road. You know, you can be riding and see, you know, Voss's name on the pavement in Zwift. It's something that we can like bring to life on our platform and through our community. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful partnership that we can really, it's just like kind of a match made in heaven. Honestly, it's really thrilling. I feel that there's so much positive things going on right now on the women's side of the sport, and we couldn't do it without ASO. And I give them a lot of credit for being open to our ideas and our energy. And of course, you know, building this together. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, just in addition to that, before we move on to things on a more personal level, which I'm going to do in a second, don't worry, but is, and I've noticed it in commentary as well, and also in the press and the media around cycling, and which extends into women's sport in general, is this has driven conversations about women as people as well. About women's menstrual cycles, about women's maternity leave, about the fact that we're completely different than men, obviously. But a lot of the subjects that are now in the open are being spoken about when before they were behind closed doors. You can't mention that about your period. You can't talk about wanting a maternity leave because you're not going to get a contract. But all those things are now being spoken about in the open. They've become completely normalized. And so it's the conversation around women which has changed as well because of what's happened in sport, which is only positive, isn't it?
It's great. It's so great. It's great for awareness. It's great for bringing out the best in women athletes now, having so much more specialization in training and performance and data. These things are so important for growing the future of women's sports. And I love that it's just a much more out there, comfortable conversation that also, like, you know, team and race management is being is stepping up and making sure that they're considering the unique needs of women and investing in women in the right way and raising the right kind of issues and conversations to ensure that we're supporting women athletes at all levels. So I love all that conversation that's going on. There's a lot more to be had. Just data right now too is so exciting to just see how much more access to data we have to really be able to bring out the best in athletes and to also make sure that we're, you know, providing the right level of support at different points of their career. And my God, you're seeing the, you know, women being supported, you know, through having babies and coming back to the sport. And I can't wait to see this year, Ellen Van Dyke is back. You know, there's so much Lizzie Dynan. I mean, there's so much incredible talent. And it's so wonderful that having a baby is no longer a career ending in women's sport. You know, it's like you come back and these women are incredibly strong and it's exciting to see. It's going to create more opportunity for women And it's just, it's the right thing to do. So it's great to see the sport stepping up and recognizing. So I love that.
Fantastic. Well, I hope you're going to be sticking around as one of the most important ambassadors of our sport on the women's side and on the men's side as well, Kate. You're an absolute breath of fresh air and you're wonderful. You really, really are. Anyway.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's all right. That's all right. Right. What I'm going to do next. Now, I did ask you when I first asked you to come on the podcast where you were brought up, because we're going to do, and you're brought up in a place called Chatham, weren't you, in New Jersey?
Correct.
So, and I'm not sure if you have listened to the podcast in the past, but over the last couple of years, one of the big segments of the podcast is called the Hometown Quiz. So, Kate, get yourself ready, brace yourself, have a drink of water, make sure you're fully fueled because it's time for the Chatham Quiz.
Dun, dun.
Yo, yo, what's up? Y'all ready? Let's do it.
Turn off your phone.
That's right.
Get your thinking cap on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's time.
What time?
Time for the
Chatham Quiz.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for Niall for rustling up that jingle. So that's one of Niall's specialities, as well as comping all this together. So I've got four questions. I spent a good hour and a half this afternoon coming up with these questions, doing a deep dive on the internet, Kate. Now, you'll be relieved to know that they're multiple choice questions, okay? So if you don't know the answer, you can have an educated guess, but it's a bit of fun. And it's I learned a lot about Chatham because I'd never heard of it. Obviously, I've heard of New Jersey. Nice. But here we go. Right. Now, I need to shine a bit more light here because my eyesight isn't what it was. So just bear with me for a second. And the afternoon light is fading. Right. That's better. Okay. Question number one. Yes. Chatham, as I've said, is a town within the state of New Jersey, which has a coat of arms. So New Jersey had a coat of arms that was designed in 1777. Okay. Now, my question to you, Kate, is what are the two women holding either side of the shield on the New Jersey coat of arms? So there's two women either side of the shield on the coat of arms. Okay. One's called Liberty. The other one's called Ceres. I'm going to give you some clues. Okay, some answers. Is it A, staff and a set of scales? Okay. Is it B, a candle snuffer and a harp? Is it C, a staff and a cornucopia? Or is it D, a pitchfork and a cornucopia? So each woman or female figure is holding something. I'll go through them again. A staff and a set of scales, a candle snuffer and a harp, a staff and a cornucopia, or a pitchfork and a cornucopia. What's the correct answer?
I'm going to go with C, staff and cornucopia.
It's correct. Well done.
Yes.
Was that a guess or did you know?
I don't know if I pulled that out of, some backspace in my brain, if I could conjure that image from my early days in Jersey, but yeah, let's go with it.
Good knowledge. So you got one. So well, that's a very, very excellent. Good start. Okay. I'm going to have to lift my chair up, my eyesight. I need to get some specs. Right. Okay. Question number two. How much does it cost for a chicken salad bagel at Chatham Bagels on 260 Main Street? Okay. I think the Chatham Bagels, it's been there a while. It looks by the pictures I've seen on the internet. Yeah. How much do you think it costs today for a chicken and salad bagel? Is it A, $6.95, B, $7 exactly, C, $7.25, or D, $7.50? So $6.95, $7.25 or $7.50 for a chicken and bagel. Sorry, chicken and salad bagel.
Chicken salad bagel. Well, I will say New Jersey, this is like, this is about 45 minutes outside of New York City. It's quite a hot town now. Real estate market's going way up. It's not a cheap place to live anymore. I'm going D, $7.50.
You're going D, $7.50. Is that your final answer?
It's my final answer.
Okay, it's $7.25. So sorry about that.
Close.
But you are quite right. I'll tell you what, I was talking about real estate because I did a proper deep dive.
Yes.
The average house price back in 2022, average house price in Chatham, $925,000.
Yep.
Average house price. Insane. Yep. And that's two or three years ago. Right. So, yeah, it's quite posh, I think it's fair to say. Right.
It is.
This should be quite a good one. I like this question. Right. I did a proper deep dive. Here we go. So, question number three. Way back in the 1800s, Chatham became famous, believe it or not, for growing roses and became a central hub for the rose growing industry in the United States. Okay.
Wow.
But what was the name of the special rose that was sent to Europe from Chatham to European royalty, including Queen Victoria, who on her golden anniversary was sent 50 roses from Chatham? And there's a special rose, okay? What is the name of this special rose? Is it A, the Chatham Heraldic Rose, B, the American Grace Rose, C, the American Beauty Rose, or D, the Chatham Golden Pink Rose?
Ooh.
So the Chatham Heraldic Rose, the American Grace Rose, the American Beauty Rose, or the Chatham Golden Pink Rose. 50 of these were sent to Queen Victoria in about 1880.
Wow. I'm going to go with D, Golden Pink. Maybe because I'm wearing a golden pink hat today.
Okay. What I'm gonna give you a bit of a help here. Okay. It's not that. But what you can do is like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But unfortunately, there's zero prizes on Matt Stevens Unplugged. We haven't got the budget for prizes.
Yeah.
But what we have got the budget for is to do. You can take away two answers. So obviously it's
okay.
Not. Well, one. You can take away a further answer. So what I'll do, I'm gonna take. Cause it's not golden pink. And it's not heraldic. Okay, so is it the American Grace Rose or the American Beauty Rose?
I'm going with American Grace Rose.
It's the wrong answer. It's the American Beauty Rose. Oh, no.
Man.
Oh, so sorry. But
I'll never forget that.
I know, yeah. It's called the American... I'm wondering, remember that film, American Beauty?
How good is that movie? How good is that movie?
Yeah, with all the roses.
Oh, I love it.
I wonder if that, because it's the American Beauty Rose, came from Chatham.
That's what, see, I figured
Amazing.
That, I figured, I know, but I figured that maybe you grabbed that name from the movie instead of the actual, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I went the wrong way.
No. I'm
American
quite,
Beauty.
Quite happy.
All right.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with
my
heraldic
race. I'm going to be looking up those roses after.
Race. Yeah, and apparently this particular rose, there's some of the stems can be up to 5 feet in length. I'm really bit on a big rose bush. So, yeah.
So, they're like
great
a
Kate flower.
Size rose. It's a giant
rose. Pretty much.
Everything grows big in Jersey.
Clearly. That's because they've been having such expensive bagels for dinner. Right.
You know, it is the Garden State. It's the Garden State.
Of course,
also
it is.
Also known for our tomatoes and
our
cranberries. Yeah. All right.
Well, we're not going to talk about gardens next, but we are going to talk about swamps because there's a famous, great swamp.
Yes, there is.
Are just to the north
right
of Chatham.
I live right down the street from it.
There we go. So this is a swamp-based question. So question number four. here we go. Which endangered salamander, endangered salamander, has been occasionally spotted in the Great Swamp? So there's one very, very rare endangered salamander that's been spotted in the Great Swamp. And I'll add some context here. There's over 150 species or varieties of salamander in America, the most in the world. There's over 150 different salamanders just in North America, the most in the world. So there you go. But I've given you a choice of four. So which one was spotted in the Great Swamp? It's very rare, endangered. Was it A, the blue-spotted salamander, the Jefferson salamander, the northern slimy salamander, or the lungless salamander, i.e. no lungs? So blue-spotted, Jefferson, northern slimy, I love that name, and the lungless, which is the rare one spotted in the Great Swamp.
I want to say Jefferson, but I'm going to go with blue spotted.
I'm going to take you first, Dad. It's blue spotted.
Yes.
Well done. Oh, great stuff. So we're just going to add up the scores. It's quite easy. You've got 50% right. Let's have a round of applause from our live studio audience for Kate Verano for her performance in the quiz.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
That was good. No, that's not bad. Not bad at all. Okay, I mean, thanks so much. We're going to wind things up. We've been chatting for nearly an hour now, but it's been great to have you on. But can you just give us a little idea of some of the other projects you might be looking at for the future? Or are you sort of still heavily involved? Obviously, still heavily involved in Tour de France, Femme Avec Zwift. So what else is on the horizon for you?
Well, we've got Paris-Roubaix Femme Avec Zwift coming up on April 6th,
I'm gonna be there. I can't wait.
So that's going to be a thrilling race this year. I will see you on the ground. That'll be great. Just in general, we're very excited to see, Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift this year on the heels of the Olympics. It's, August 12th through the 18th. So, you know, there's peak excitement about cycling around the Olympics as well, because it really enters, the main stage of sport. So I think coming off of the Olympics, the tour is going to have, once again, a groundbreaking, a record-breaking year. So, beyond that, we've got, so much exciting stuff going on in Zwift. We're going to decorate the Alpe d'Huez in Zwift, the Alpe du Zwift. We have built the Alpe d'Huez in Zwift, and we'll do some fun decor on that this year leading into the women's race to get our community excited about it. We've got a Zwift Women's Training Club that Kristen Armstrong is designing a bunch of workouts for, and has been a wonderful way to build on our global women's cycling community. So there's a lot of fun things happening, and I can't wait. It's just going to be a great, great year of cycling. I'm already glued to every race that I can watch. The action this year is already so thrilling. And with Lotta Capecchi really eyeing Paris-Roubaix Femme Avec Zwift, that's going to be a hard-fought competition. Oh, I can't wait. A lot of, good talent back. It's going to be great.
Are you going to have a chance to ride it? Are you going to get out there a little bit early and ride some of the cobbles? Okay. Actually, have you ever ridden over those sorts of cobbles? Because
I've done a little bit. You really would. Yeah. You know me. I always bring my bike everywhere. And now, cobbles are good for, like a big unit like me. So I actually can roll over cobbles pretty good. I will have my bike on me. I always travel with my bike, so I'll probably do a few sectors just to really make sure I understand just how severe the terrain is that these women are going to be racing. So yeah, I'll be riding a bit. I'm not going to do the whole Paris-Roubaix challenge, but I'll do a couple sectors and definitely be riding my bike around town.
Nice one. Well, I'll definitely see you for a beer anyway. We'll definitely make sure we have a French beer, not a Belgian beer. We're not quite near enough for Belgium for that.
Yes.
But no, we'll definitely have a beer in Roubaix. And Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure. It always is. Thanks very much for sharing your insight, especially on International Women's Day as well. It's been a lot of fun. Take care, and I'll see you very soon. Thanks again.
Can't wait. Thanks so much, Matt. Appreciate it.
Inspirational stuff from Kate there. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Now, if you feel inspired to go for a ride, Sigma Sports are hosting a couple of International Women's Day rideouts from their stores. The Hampton Wick ride is full, but there are still places available at the Oakham store on March the 16th. Head to sigmasports.com/rides to sign up. This podcast was produced by Noel Gaffney on behalf of Hot Chili. Thanks to Perry Ap Gwyneth for the podcast theme tune, and thanks to you as ever for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe and rate the pod, and why not recommend it to all of the best cyclists you know who aren't yet riding a bike. What a line. Love it. Cheers all, stay safe and goodbye.